Hello, and welcome to the Murderosity Podcast, where we discuss all things murder, mayhem, the mysterious, and the macabre. I'm your co-host, Bob Hancock, joined on the other side by Rebel Roan. Rebel, how are you doing this week?
Doing really good. How are you?
I want to say I'm good, but this case that we have is a heavy one. And as good as I would say I normally am, this case is a very, very serious and somber one. So I'm going to say that while I am good, my respect goes out to the victim and their family in this case. And we'll get into this more, but this is an ongoing case. So
yep.
I guess I can ask you where we are going this week.
So our next case takes us to Owosso, Oklahoma in February of 2024.
All right. So for those of you not familiar with Owosso, Owosso is a city in Rogers and Tulsa counties in the U.S. state of Oklahoma. It's the largest northern suburb of Tulsa. The population was around 39,000 people in the 2022 census. Compared that to 29,000-ish at the 2010 census. So it's seen a population gain of about 36%. It's growing. It was originally settled in 1881 in what was then called Indian Territory, and the town was incorporated in 1904, just before Oklahoma statehood, and it was chartered as a city in 1972. Owosso is in the northeastern corner of Oklahoma, known as Green Country, for its vegetation, hills, woods, and lakes. This is in stark contrast to the drier Great Plains region of central and western Oklahoma. And Owosso actually still does lie in what is known in the states as Tornado Alley. It's a stretch of states where tornadoes are known to appear. Now, Owosso became a bedroom community in the 1950s for Tulsa, which was only about 12 miles or 19 kilometers away. Now, what a bedroom community is where you would live and sleep bedroom in one town while working in another. So a lot of people that lived in Owosso were actually working in Tulsa. So the industry around Owosso expanded in the 1990s and the 1980s, and that's really what has stimulated this growth. However, I don't think that's why we're here.
No. So before we get into the case this week, we'll need to discuss some new laws put into place in Oklahoma as are part of the overall discussion we'll be having today. In 2022, Oklahoma became the first U.S. state to prohibit the use of non-binary gender markers on birth certificates. Students are legally required to use a bathroom that corresponds with assigned sex at birth, and minors are legally prevented from receiving gender-affirming care. The Oklahoma Senate passed three anti-LGBTQ+ bills in 2023, SB 26, SB 408, and SB 397. SB 26 prohibits trans students and athletes from using the locker room consistent with their gender identity, but allows a coach to enter any locker room provided that athletes are fully clothed. SB 408 is a bill that seeks to exclude transgender women from the legal definition of women. SB 397 is a curriculum censorship bill that discourages access to books and materials by requiring all school districts, charter schools, and public libraries to conduct an inventory and assign ratings to books in their collection. In October 2023, the federal judge in Tulsa declined to stop a new law from taking effect that makes it a felony crime for healthcare workers in Oklahoma to provide gender-affirming medical care to young transgender people. U.S. District Court Judge John Hale III issued the order denying a motion for a preliminary injunction sought by the plaintiffs, which include family members of transgender children in Oklahoma, as well as a medical provider. Hale wrote, "This is an area in which medical and policy debate is unfolding, and the Oklahoma legislature can rationally take the side of caution before permitting irreversible medical treatments of its children." He also wrote that the plaintiffs had not demonstrated that parents have a fundamental right to choose such medical care for their children. The new law passed in May of 2023 and bans medical treatments like puberty-blocking drugs or hormones for those younger than 18. This law includes a 6-month transition period for minors who were already receiving puberty-blocking drugs or cross-sex hormones. Attorneys for the plaintiff included the American Civil Liberties Union, the ACLU of Oklahoma, Lambda Legal, and Jenner & Block LLP. They issued a joint statement that said, "In denying transgender youth equality before the law and needlessly withholding the necessary medical care their families and doctors know is right for them has caused and will continue to cause serious harm. Oklahoma is one of at least 22 states that have enacted laws restricting or banning gender-affirming medical care for transgender minors, and most face lawsuits similar to the one in Oklahoma. In February 2024, these laws were brought back to the media spotlight with the death of Nex Benedict. For the purpose of this podcast and remaining consistent, we will use they-them pronouns for Nex, though they also went by he-him, particularly at school.
So, I'm going to add on to what you were talking about. This last year, 2023, saw a massive, massive spike in anti-LGBTQ plus bills. At least 510 such bills were introduced in state legislatures across the United States last year. That's a new record, according to the aforementioned American Civil Liberties Union, or the ACLU. So that's nearly three times the number of such bills that were introduced in 2022. Again, it's important to understand that these are new bills. These are not standing laws at all. So education and healthcare related bills in particular flooded in at unprecedented levels, according to the group's data through December 21st, along with a renewed push to ban access to gender affirming healthcare for transgendered youth. There was a heavy focus on regulating curriculum in public schools, including discussions around gender identity and sexuality. Gender affirming care, so to define it, well, it is medically necessary, evidence-based care that uses a multidisciplinary approach to help a person transition from their assigned gender at birth to their affirmed gender, or the gender by which a person wants to be known. There's also been a shift towards new categories of bills. Just as states followed Florida's bill that opponents labeled Don't Say Gay, which restricts in-school discussions about sexual orientation or gender identity. Several joined Tennessee in proposing bills that would ban drag performances as well. That was a pretty big thing last year, I think everybody would remember, is drag performers reading in libraries and how massive an outrage that caused at certain points. Now, several states also introduced forced outing bills. Now, what a forced outing bill is it requires teachers to alert parents when a student begins going by a different name or pronouns. And this is done even without the consent of the student. So sometimes these students don't have a safe home life where they feel comfortable being who they are. And this is saying that the teachers are required to put them into that kind of a situation. Now, 65 of the education-related bills introduced this year are actually forced outing bills, according to the ACLU. Now, by the end of the year, 84 bills were signed into law in 23 states. So about 16% of the total number of bills filed across the country became law in 2023. Tennessee and North Dakota both tied for the most number of anti-LGBTQ bills passed, with 10 each. Arkansas was not far behind with 8. More than a dozen of the bills passed last year are being challenged in court, according to the ACLU. But what we're seeing here is that Oklahoma, which we are focusing on right now, and all these things that Rebel has pointed out, is not the outlier. This is, you have a number of bills being voted on and being brought before the legislature at a rate of almost 2 bills per day. That is insane.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm making things too simple. Maybe I should try to be more neutral, but for reasons that are my own, I can't be. These bills, a lot of them are predatory, in my opinion. Things like the Don't Say Gay bill from Florida, the forced outing bills, it creates even more division, and it's also a diversion from what you're actually there for, which is to learn. Now, people say that, you know, we're trying to take away the diversion, but you can't. Like, this is something that we need to have these tough conversations, no matter which side of the aisle you're sitting on this. There has to be an open dialogue, and people have to feel safe enough to have that. I, for the life of me, cannot understand the lengths that people are going to right now to suppress another group of people.
Right.
That's, I agree. That's my opinion on it. And so now I'm going to ask you, Rebel, given all the things that you've read and the things that I have also given to you, what are your thoughts and opinions on this?
Mine are very much the same. I mean, I think that there has been a lot of, for lack of a better term, attacks on the LGBTQ plus community. And it's just getting worse every day. And nobody's having conversations. It's attacks after attacks.
It is. And we'll get into some more later that you and I have were alive for, not necessarily witnessed with our own eyes, but saw the consequences and stuff like that of. Mm-hmm. But this is, if you haven't figured it out by now, dear reader, this is definitely not going to be one of our funner cases that we do, but it's a very, very important one. And again, especially if you're on the other side of this issue, because full disclosure, for many years I was. That's how I was raised. That's what we believed in. And I grew past it. So I would challenge you to stick around and listen and just keep an open mind for the next 30, 40 minutes of your life. It might not change yours, but it might change somebody else's. So you mentioned Next Benedict. I'm assuming that's who our case is this week.
It is, yes. So Next was born on January 11th, 2008 in El Paso, Texas. Their biological father relinquished parental rights and is in prison for abuse. Next's grandmother, Sue Benedict, raised them since the age of 2 months old and formally adopted them a few years before their death. Sue is enrolled in the Choctaw Nation of Oklahoma, but Next was not affiliated with the tribe. They lived in Owosso, Oklahoma, the suburb of Tulsa, on the Cherokee Nation Reservation. They attended Owosso High School, which has 3,000 students in grades 9 through 12. According to Sue and Next's friends, students at the school had been bullying Next due to their gender identity for over a year.
So this is going to bring up another very touchy subject, and that's school bullying. So I think it's important that we define it first. And school bullying, like bullying outside of the school context, refers to one or more perpetrators who have greater physical strength or more social power than their victim and who repeatedly act aggressively towards their victim. I think it's very important here that we understand that it's not just, you know, imagining Nelson from The Simpsons pounding Bart. Like, it's not just someone who has greater physical strength and physical power over another person, but it can also be, especially in the context now of cyberbullying, that someone has more social power than the victim. Bullying can be verbal, it can be physical. With its ongoing character, it's distinct from just a one-off type of peer conflict. I mentioned that it could be verbal or physical, but different types of school bullying often include emotional, verbal aggression, cyberbullying, and even sexual bullying, which is what we're going to talk about a bit today. There are also types of bullying. So bullying even exists, like in higher education. There was a report where over 15% of college students experienced bullying in that environment as well. There are a lot of warning signs that suggest that a child is being bullied, or that a child is acting as a bully, or that a child has witnessed bullying. So for the parents out there, I'm going to give you a few things that you might want to look for. Because to be honest, it's not just that maybe your child is being bullied. Your child may also be the perpetrator and you didn't know it, and there's time to correct it and make it better. Or maybe your child saw somebody being bullied and doesn't know how to deal with that, because witnessing such things can also cause trauma. So some of the signs that a child is being bullied can include unexplainable injuries, symptoms of anxiety and post-traumatic stress, lost or destroyed clothing or other objects, changes in eating habits, declining grades, continual school absences, self-harm, suicidal ideations, and becoming overly apologetic. The signs that a child is bullying others may include getting into physical or verbal fights, being sent to the principal's office frequently, having friends that bullies others or that are often problematic, or becoming increasingly aggressive in normal activities where you would not have seen signs of aggression before. Signs that a child has witnessed bullying can include poor school behavior, emotional disturbance, depression, post-traumatic stress, drug or alcohol abuse, or suicidal ideations. A lot of these are often so subtle, things that you wouldn't really notice, especially like becoming overly apologetic. I think we all know somebody who says, "I'm sorry," about everything they do. Just something that you can look for. Now, statistics do show that in U.S. school system, 1 in 3 children are often affected by bullying. So that's about 30%, and that's just what's reported. In 1997, a study of 5 Seattle high schools, students recorded their peers' hallway classroom conversations, and it was discovered that the average high school student hears about 25 anti-gay remarks a day. Students who are homosexual, bisexual, or transgender are 5 times as likely to miss school because they feel unsafe after being bullied due to their sexual orientation or their gender identity. According to the U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the percentage of gay, lesbian, and bisexual students who did not go to school at least one day during the 30 days preceding the survey due to safety concerns ranged from 11 to 30% for gay and lesbian students and 12 to 25% for bisexual students. 61.1% of the LGBTQ plus middle or high school students were more likely than their non-LGBTQ plus peers to feel unsafe or uncomfortable as a result of their sexual orientation. In the United States, a 2013 nationwide survey indicated that 20% of high school students were bullied on school property in the past year, and that 15% of the students were bullied electronically. 8% of students between ages 12 and 18 reported ongoing bullying on a weekly basis. Now, according to the Journal of Evolutionary Psychological Science, victims of bullying are far more likely to be sexually inactive as compared to their bullies. So what you're seeing is these hardcore bullying having long-term psychological effects on people. And again, I'm sure that we can all think back to someone that we know who went through such things and how it affected them. Yeah. I can't say that I was a victim of like major bullying. I was never part of this community either, so my bullying experiences would have been much different. High school, I really didn't have to deal with any of that, but you know, middle school and elementary. Our listeners that don't know it, I have big Dumbo ears, and I heard that all the time. So my solution to it was to learn how to flap them and make jokes. I had to put on my own little armor, but it wasn't as extreme as a lot of other people, and it was very childish and easier for me to laugh off. That said, I've seen many people go through things that you just can't. You can't just shake it off and push through it. So, Rebel, do you have any insight or experiences that you'd like to share?
Yeah, I had a bully from elementary school all the way through high school. One person specifically. There were some others, but one person specifically that just made my life hell from pretty much like second grade all the way through high school. And our names were close in the alphabet. So we always ended up with like classes together or lockers that were close to one another, and he would like come up and like slam my locker closed and like right after I opened it and just basically taunt me, make fun of me the whole nine yards. I did get a little bit of karma though, because a few years ago I saw in the newspaper that he got arrested for meth. You know, he got what's coming to him. So like I felt a little bit vindicated at that point.
I can't say as I blame you on that. Like yeah. It's not like they don't understand what they're doing either. So I do feel for you on that. And, you know, what goes around comes around. I have to believe it. I have to.
Yeah. So. And I'm really glad that we kind of came up in the early internet ages where cyberbullying wasn't as prevalent.
Yeah.
I can't imagine going through that on top of the bullying that I experienced, because it was pretty traumatic. And like, I can still remember his name, like, you know, he's probably somebody that I wouldn't have associated with him in general. We wouldn't have been friends. He's probably somebody that I wouldn't have remembered had it not been for that.
Well, I'm going to say first off that my heart does go out to you for having experienced that. But knowing you as I know you now, I know that you're a very strong person and you've come a long way. I will say it that way. You've come a long way. So now that we have established that, I would like to know a little bit more about Nex. What can you tell me about them?
Nex's friend, only known by their first name, Allie, said of them, it was one of those things where you meet them and you automatically feel like you've known them for years kind of thing. They were such an adventurous little thing. It was never a dull moment with them. According to friends and family, Nex loved nature and their cat, Zeus. They loved the TV show The Walking Dead, video games like Ark and Minecraft, and they were a gifted artist. They always searched for the best in people and were known as a free spirit. They were a good student and in the 10th grade. On February 7th, 2024, Sue was contacted by Owosso High School to say that Nex had been in an altercation. She arrived to find Nex with bruises on their face and scratches on the back of their head. The school said that Nex was suspended for the next 2 weeks. Sue then took them to the Bailey Medical Center to be examined and called the Owosso Police Department at around 3:30 p.m. Surveillance footage from the school hallway showed six students entering the bathroom where the incident occurred, then showed Nex and two students entering. According to body cam footage recorded from the school resource officer, when asked what happened, Nex replied, "I got jumped." According to Nex, they were talking and laughing with their group of friends when one unassociated girl said, "Why do they laugh like that?" This was done in front of them, and a verbal altercation began. Nex stated that they poured water on the girls, then was grabbed by the hair by one of them. Nex pushed a girl into a paper towel dispenser, but said, "They got my legs from out from under me." Once Nex was on the ground, they were beaten and lost consciousness. Sue said that before the incident, Nex had told her about the three girls not leaving them alone, which included calling them names and throwing things at them. However, this harassment was not reported to the school, and Nex said, "I didn't see a point."
So this is going to bring us to another very important topic, and that is victims that don't report. This is another thing that I think just about all of us have known someone that has been assaulted in some way or another that hasn't reported. That's something that when I was in the military, they were very much trying to stop as much as you can. When you go to the base today, in the bathrooms, they have these papers with your SHARP representative, which is sexual harassment, assault reporting, something. Anyway, it's so that you know who you can contact if you or someone you know have been assaulted. So even in the military, steps are being taken to help victims and to help people report. In 2016, U.S. residents aged 12 or older experienced 5.7 million violent offenses. This includes rape or sexual assault, robbery, and aggravated and simple assault. Now, of that number, only 42% of victims of violent crime reported the offenses to police. The reluctance to report is troubling for several reasons. Offenders often aren't held accountable for their actions, and they can continue to repeat or commit new crimes, which is detrimental to public safety. Victims also don't receive a sense of justice or the support and tools that can help them heal and regain their quality of life. The National Crime Victimization Survey data also showed that only 12% of victims of serious violence reported having received services to assist them in the crime's aftermath. Victims may decide not to report because they choose to deal with the crime privately. They may believe that going to the police will place them in further danger, or that what happened is, quote, not important enough to report. If they know the offender, they may be reluctant to cause trouble, or they may doubt the willingness or the ability of police to help or believe them at all in their account. There are a myriad of reasons, and I respect the decision of each victim to make their own decision because it is a very difficult journey one way or the other. But I also know that with the right victim services offered at the right time by trained and qualified providers, that it can transform lives. The thing that gets me again on this is the question, is always like, well, especially for victim blaming, is, well, if it was so bad, why didn't they report it? Next said they didn't see the point. This is why. So often, justice is not served. And if it is done, it is done in a way that is ineffectual and oftentimes doesn't leave the victim feeling like justice was served. And here it also shows that only 12% of victims of serious violence get services and help to assist them afterwards. That is a disgustingly low number, especially since we do pour money into those resources. Like, they're there and they're there to be used, but victims are not given access to it. And that is terrible. There's no other word that I can use for that. It's horrific. This person was bullied. They, again, yeah, calling names. People say that's not such a big thing. It is. You know, they had things thrown at them. These girls were doing it repeatedly. And next didn't see a point in reporting it. Maybe if they had felt comfortable enough and safe enough to report them, we wouldn't be doing this case right now.
Right.
So do you have any insight or thoughts on this?
I mean, so I've been a victim of, you know, life, I guess. I won't go too far into it here, but, you know, you and I have talked about some of those things, and there wasn't enough resources. There wasn't enough victim support. I didn't feel like a good resolution had been reached in the court system. The legal system failed me. You know, just a lot of things. I walked away feeling not like I had won anything, not that I should have won anything, but like I felt like there wasn't a resolution to what had happened to me.
I would agree with you wholeheartedly, having accompanied you on your journey as much as I can.
Mm-hmm.
I'll say it like that. I cannot imagine the roller coaster of emotions that you had to go through. And to put this into perspective, you were one of the people that did report.
Right.
And this is how you felt afterwards, let alone, you know, someone that maybe didn't have the ability to do what you did. And to see what you went through, it was heartbreaking.
And to be honest, if I had to go through it again, I probably would not report, because there was so much that was failed. You know, I felt so bad about myself at the end of everything that I didn't see a point.
And that's exactly why I said this is terrible. This is a system that needs fixing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that comes as no surprise to anyone that's listened to our podcast by now, that I will say that our legal system needs fixing, a serious overhaul. But this is a perfect example. And like I said, this is your story, not mine, but watching you go through it was difficult. So the strength that you had to get through it, I can't say anything other than I'm very proud of you as a person. Now, back to next, though, what did the officer say? Like, what was law enforcement side of this?
So the officer said that it was possible that the incident might have been seen in the courts as a mutual fight, since Next poured water on them, and he said that they started it. He said that they might also face charges if the girls' guardians pursued legal action. He said, quote, "What's good for the goose is good for the gander." Sue declined to press charges on the assault, though the officer did say that if Next appeared to be injured beyond scrapes and bruises, she could contact if seeking charges was reconsidered. Next was discharged later that day and reportedly went to sleep with a sore head. The following day, February 8th, 2024, Next collapsed in the family's living room. Sue called 911, saying that their eyes had rolled back and they were struggling to breathe. Next stopped breathing by the time the EMTs arrived and was declared dead at the hospital that evening. Owosso Police Chief Dan Yancey said, "No report of the incident was made to the Owosso Police Department prior to the notification at the hospital. On February 9th, a search warrant was issued for the school, where the police collected 137 pictures from the school, two swabs of stains from the bathroom, as well as records and documents relating to the students involved in the incident. In a statement on February 20th, an Owosso police spokesperson said that the school staff and students were being interviewed by detectives. They also said the police investigation would be provided to the Tulsa County District Attorney's Office to review for prosecution. On February 21st, Owosso police posted a statement on social media that said, "While the investigation continues into the altercation, preliminary information from the medical examiner's office is that a complete autopsy was performed and indicated that the decedent did not die as a result of trauma. Further comments on the cause of death are currently pending until toxicology results and other ancillary testing results are received." A police department spokesperson said on February 21st that the hallway video from inside the school showing next before and after the incident had been reviewed by investigators. On February 23rd, the police released footage from the school surveillance cameras, officer-worn body cameras, and audio of the 911 calls Sue made on February 7th and 8th. A spokesperson for the Owosso Police Department, Nick Boatman, said in a statement to Popular Information that the medical examiner had not explicitly said that Nex's death was unrelated to their head injuries. He also said that the Owosso police had reached out to the examiner's office in order to head off national scrutiny. The Benedict family is privately investigating the incident, also stating that there were other facts not publicly made available. On February 27th, Boatman told NBC News that the medical examiner's office had not ruled the fight out as a possible cause or contributor in Nex's death. He said people shouldn't make assumptions either way. On March 1st, 2024, the Office for Civil Rights Division of the U.S. Department of Education informed the Human Rights Campaign, or HRC, via letter that they were opening an investigation into the Oklahoma School District and wrote they were looking into, quote, whether the district failed to appropriately respond to alleged harassment of students in a manner consistent with the requirements of Title IX, and whether the district failed to appropriately respond to alleged harassment of students in a manner consistent with the requirements of Section 504 and Title II. This was in response to a complaint filed by the HRC. On February 21st, HRC President Kelly Robinson had requested an investigation of Owosso High School by writing to the United States Secretary of Education, Miguel Cardona. The request was to see whether the school had, quote, unlawfully failed to address the discrimination and harassment to which Nex was subjected. On March 1st, a spokesperson for the school district said that the district is, quote, committed to cooperating with federal officials and believes the complaint submitted by HRC is not supported by the facts and is without merit. The weekend following Nex's death, a national hotline run by Indianapolis-based Rainbow Youth Project had more than three times the usual number of calls from Oklahoma. Many mentioned Nex's death, and most reported that they'd been bullied themselves. On February 16th, 2024, Owosso Public School sent a letter to parents. They said they would increase the number of security personnel within the district, update their safety drills and rules, and provide additional counseling services for students affected by their death. On February 22nd, Owosso Police Department spokesperson Nick Boatman said that there had been a number of threats made towards Owosso Public Schools following Nex's death. Boatman stated that the police department had brought in other agencies, such as the Department of Homeland Security and FBI, as part of a statewide task force to track down those who had made the threats. Nex's family issued a statement asking that the threats against school employees and students cease. They also requested authorities to take action in Nex's case and to address school bullying.
In an initial toxicology report on March 13, 2024, it was determined that Nex died by a toxicity of antihistamines and antidepressants, which they overdosed on, and has been ruled as a suicide.
After Nex's death, a number of vigils honoring them were held across the state of Oklahoma, as well as in a number of other states. Hundreds of people attended a vigil in Oklahoma City, where a speaker asked queer adults in the audience to raise their candles and identify themselves to youth, and said, "This is your family. These are the people who have your back. These are the people who made it through their teenage years and came out on the other side. They are the ones who are living healthy, good lives. You are not alone. Do you understand? You are not alone." On February 26th, at least 40 students at Owosso High School participated in a school walkout, stating concerns about bullying, including support of the 2SLGBTQ community at the school and in the city. 2SLGBTQ stands for Two Spirit and Native American Community. In addition to vigils held for their death, numerous advocacy groups have made statements regarding Nex's death, and shedding light on the LGBTQ plus community needs. Many have noted that while the facts surrounding their death are still not a complete picture, that this could be considered a hate-motivated attack. Many people have brought up Matthew Shepard, a gay college student who was brutally murdered for being gay in October of 1998 near Laramie, Wyoming. His murder rocked the LGBTQ plus community and the nation and received widespread media attention.
Matthew Shepard. This was a case that I remember very, very well. My mother worked at a video center back when you had to go and rent movies. You couldn't just stream them. She worked there for a gay couple who were good friends with Matthew Shepard. And they were very torn up about it. I remember that. I remember how emotional they were. And Wyoming is a place that at that time, like, I think a lot of us maybe didn't understand the impact that it would have. Maybe we just didn't want to, but it certainly did. Now, what happened with Matthew Shepard was brutal. I'm going to give a brief overview of what happened to him. It was on a night of October 6th, 1998. Matthew was approached by Aaron McKinney and Russell Henderson at the Fireside Lounge in Laramie. All three men were in their early 20s. McKinney and Henderson offered to give Shepard a ride home. They subsequently drove him to a rural area and proceeded to rob, pistol whip, and torture him. They tied him to a split rail fence and left him to die. It was erroneously reported by the news that he had been tied to a barbed wire fence. That's really not the important thing. Many of the media reports at the time, though, did give a graphic account of what happened to him. The pistol whipping, how it fractured his skull. Reports also described that Shepard was beaten so brutally that his face was completely covered in blood, except where it had been partially cleansed by his tears. Still tied to the fence, Shepard was in a coma 18 hours after the attack, when he was discovered by Aaron Kriefels, a cyclist, who initially mistook him for a scarecrow. Reggie Flutie was the first police officer to arrive on the scene, and he found Shepard alive but covered in blood. Matthew was transported first to Ivinson Memorial Hospital in Laramie before being moved to the more advanced trauma ward at Poudre Valley Hospital in Fort Collins, Colorado. He had suffered fractures to the back of his head and in front of his right ear. He experienced severe brainstem damage, which affected his body's ability to regulate his heart rate, body temperature, and other vital functions. There was also about a dozen small lacerations around his head, face, and neck, and his injuries were deemed too severe for doctors to even operate on them. Matthew never regained consciousness and remained on full life support. While he lay in intensive care, and in the days following the attack, similar to what happened with Nex, there were candlelight vigils held. Now, these were held all over the world. Now, he was pronounced dead 6 days after the attack at 12:53 a.m. on October 12, 1998. He was 21 years old. This was back in 1998. People who were born that year are voting now. That's how long ago it was. And this is still an issue. This is still a massive, massive issue. When Rebel first approached me about talking about this case, they gave me information. And the first thing that I said to them was, this reminds me of Matthew Shepard.
Yeah.
That's how deeply that case rooted itself into people. For us, we were in Wyoming at the time. I actually lived in Laramie. I've been to that bar. I've seen the area where he was found. Lived there for several years, in fact. And for me, it's tragic that we are still having this conversation 26 years later. So all I can do is hope that everybody out there will do their part. Just be a decent person. You don't have to understand everything. Sometimes just accept it.
Yeah.
Now, you were living in Casper at the same time, and Matthew Shepard actually was originally from Casper, our hometown. Mm-hmm. What are your recollections about that time?
I remember the case. My sister was a couple years older than me, so she had more ties to the community, the LGBTQ plus community, than I did. I was a little too young at that point to really be a part of it, but I remember, like, Westboro Baptist Church.
How could I forget them?
Oh, God. Yeah, they're terrible, terrible people. But
Terrible.
they came and boycotted the funeral, and the people that dressed up as angels to block them. I don't remember very much other than that. I mean, the story itself, I remember the media and I remember reading a lot. And as you said, they gave a lot of details that probably weren't necessary, to be honest.
Agreed.
But it really struck home with me, and like you, I've carried it throughout the years and everything, and it's just terrible.
It's an absolute tragedy. And like I said, this I know that they aren't like a one for one match, but for whatever reason, like I said, the instant that it was mentioned and I read the case file and I looked at what was going on, as this sounds like another Matthew Shepard case. And those were words that I really never wanted to utter in my lifetime.
Right.
So back to Nex and the family and the victims. Is there anything that has been set up, any sort of maybe a GoFundMe or anything like that being set up for the family?
Yeah, Nix's family set up a GoFundMe, though in it they did name and use improper pronouns. They later posted an update apologizing for this in writing. We at this time are thankful for the ongoing support and did not expect the love from everyone. We are sorry for not using their name correctly. And as parents, we are still learning the correct forms. Please do not judge us as Next was judged. Please do not bully us for our ignorance on the subject. Next gave us that respect, and we are sorry in our grief that we overlooked them. I lost my child. The headstone will have correct name of their choice. The rest of the monies will go to other children dealing with the right to be who they feel they are. In Next Benedict's name, God bless. The GoFundMe has raised over $160,000. If you or someone you know need mental health services in the LGBTQ plus community, please visit the PFLAG website. PFLAG is the nation's largest organization dedicated to supporting, educating, and advocating for LGBTQ plus people and those who love them. And we'll post that in our show notes.
So this is the part of the show where I give my closing thoughts. Though if I'm being honest, I don't think I've shied away from sharing my thoughts throughout today. So, dear listener, my closing thoughts on our case today is this. Don't be a jerk. If you don't understand something, that's okay. If you want to know, ask in a respectful way. Everybody's more than happy to share something with you, no doubt, as long as they feel that you're being respectful of them. And just because someone's lifestyle isn't what you think it should be, doesn't mean that it requires your input, opinion, or action, truthfully. We are all human beings and we're all trying to make it through this crazy thing called life. And I think a bit of love and compassion would go a long way on that.
I agree. Well said.
So that's my closing thoughts for today. Do you have any other closing thoughts for us today, Rebel?
I think you covered it by don't be a jerk, honestly.
Well, awesome. So, words to live by.
Yes.
I'm Bob, and you can quote me on that. So, moving on to our anticipated missing person of the week.
So this week's missing person case is going to be gone over by Bob.
Excellent. So, this week's missing person case is Christopher Carlton Tompkins of Harris County, Georgia. Christopher was working in a wooded area near County Line Road off Warm Springs Road on January 25th, 2002, and he has not been seen since. Christopher was born on December 21st, 1981, so at this time he's 42 years old. He's 5'7", 123 pounds, with brown eyes and black hair, and it was last seen braided. He has a tattoo of an ice cream cone with the name Chris on his right arm. He was last seen wearing a black shirt, blue and gray plaid jacket with a gray hood, a black watch, navy Dickies work pants, and tan FUBU boots. That morning, Christopher's mother, Ann McKenzie, saw him, and it was a normal morning. They headed to work together because she was a babysitter for his boss. According to law enforcement, Christopher was working with a survey crew in a wooded area in Ellerslie, Georgia. He was with three co-workers working approximately 50 feet from one another. One employee looked away, noticed around noon that he was missing. Ann said they called me about a few minutes to five to tell me that they couldn't find him, and they found one of his boots. The family began to search on their own that evening and into the next morning. While they did not find Christopher, they did find some things that belonged to him. They found some spare change on the ground and a snag of pants on a barbed wire fence that matched the pair that he was last seen wearing. The Harris County Sheriff's Office searched the nearby ponds and used cadaver dogs to search for him. When the Georgia Bureau of Investigations took over the case, they found the other shoe. Sheriff Mike Jolie said, "So the assumption was at the time that he walked off the job site, which was consistent with what the co-worker said, walked through the woods, went over towards the interstate. We believe that he got into an automobile and just left the area. However, with 4 weeks passing and not hearing from Christopher, the sheriff changed his mind, stating, "My biggest fear is that when he came up missing in 2002, he went to a large city right after he came up missing. He might have overdosed or something else might have happened to him. Because he had no identification on him, that city went ahead and disposed of him." Christopher's family does not agree, stating that he didn't have a drug problem. And his aunt Rosalind Mathis said, "I don't believe that Chris walked away. I don't believe he disappeared with one shoe. Who's going to walk around with one boot on in cold weather on a rural road? I just don't believe that happened. They know what happened to Chris. They're just not telling." If you or someone you know has any information about Christopher Tompkins, please contact the Harris County Sheriff's Office at 706-628-4211. And as always, if you want to give tips anonymously, contact Crime Stoppers.
Absolutely.
Well, Rebel, I think that is about enough emotion for one episode. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I think that was a roller coaster of emotions, and there was a lot more downs and ups this week, but it's an important case, and I think both of these cases are important to discuss and to shed spotlight on them and everything.
The only way we can move forward through tough topics is to have tough conversations. So if we can be a conversation starter for one listener out there, then it's totally worth it. Props to all of you, dear listeners, that made it through this episode with us. We appreciate every one of you. Now, Rebel, if those appreciated listeners want to point some of their family members or friends to our lovely podcast, how would you recommend they do that?
So we're hosted on Podbean, and we can be found on most of the major podcasting sites, so Amazon, Apple, Spotify, etc. We post our show notes on murderosity.com, and we can be found on the social media sites as Murderosity or Murderosity Podcast. And as always, we accept tips, emails, requests, as simple, hey, whatever you want to say to us, murderosity@gmail.com.
Absolutely. We love interacting with all of our listeners. We look forward to hearing from you every week. Any kind of feedback is appreciated. We can always, we're always looking for ways to improve. So we want to give you that good, good content.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for me, and I think for Rebel as well. So take it easy, and we'll see you on the next one.
Stay safe out there.